I want to tell you about something I've used and I truly believe in. Replayer. It's a sideline camera built for youth sports. Just set it up, hit record, and it captures the entire game automatically. No chasing the ball, no holding your phone, just hands-free, stress-free recording. The in-game tagging is one of my favorite features. One tap, and you can mark a big goal, ankle-breaking moves, or a clutch tackle. Then pull those clips for later for review, highlights, or social media. And the live streaming's next level. A buddy of mine actually watched his son's game while flying cross country at 30,000 feet. That blew me away. If you're a parent or coach at the field every weekend, Replayer is a game changer. Head to replayer.com. That's Replayer.com. And I think you'll be amazed. Hey, soccer friends, I just want to give a shout out to our partner, TeamPlayer. They are changing the game on how you find the perfect soccer team for your player. Parents, this means no more endless social media scrolling to find information on teams. With TeamPlayer, everything you need to know is just a few clicks away. It's simple, straightforward, and lets you find the best coach and team for your player without any of the usual headaches. And coaches, we all know how tough it can be to get your team noticed, but when you subscribe to one of Team Player's team plans, you instantly get access to set up an online team profile that allows you to reach more potential players and showcase what your team is all about. It's super easy and lets players and parents see why your team could be the right fit for them. And if you sign up using the promo code PITCH, you can try any team plan free for 1 month. So whether you're managing a team or searching for one, come on over to www.teamplayer.us. That is TeamPlayer.us. And come give Team Player a look.
Family-owned Soccer Innovation is your go-to source for top-quality equipment. Whether you're a player, a supportive family member, or a dedicated coach, they have everything you need to elevate your game. For players, their innovative equipment are designed to boost your skills and performance on the pitch. From their agility cones to their portable goals, they have you covered. And family members, they offer durable equipment that's built to last because we know your support is critical to your player. Coaches, trust me, they can provide the equipment you need to run effective training sessions and shape the next generation of soccer players. Visit Soccer Innovations at soccerinnovations.com to start elevating your game with them.
And if you use the code PITCH, P-I-T-C-H, you can receive up to 10% off your next order. Welcome back to Chat by the Pitch. This is Ian Babcock, your host. This week, I sat down with Fort Worth All-Stars. This is a small up-and-coming club that's been around for a few years, so let's start this chat and head to the pitch.
My name is Monshoth Montes with Fort Worth All-Stars FC. And apart from being one of the co-owners here at Fort Worth All-Stars FC, I have also coached the 2015 girls and 2016 girls teams.
Awesome. So where did the idea of Fort Worth All-Stars come from?
It originated with one team at the beginning only. It wasn't the FC. We just had one All-Stars team, which was of kids from the Fort Worth neighborhood that just wanted to have fun and play. And so we started it like that. And over time, we gained a lot of players. And once we saw that we had some pretty good teams trying to compete in higher levels, it was a little bit difficult money-wise. We tried getting different kids into different clubs that we knew of that were close here. But it was always a struggle with the money side of things, the financial side of things. So we decided to take it into our own hands and say, you know what, we're going to do this for these kids in this neighborhood. We wanted to be the ones to provide them with that opportunity to play at those higher levels without those expenses being so much as a burden to them. That way they could still get that level of growth and development in the game while not having to worry so much about those kinds of things.
That's very impressive. So as you guys started this, so what age groups do you guys have for the club then?
Currently, we have anywhere from kids that were born in 2018 all the way to kids that were born in 2010.
Okay.
We have both age groups of girls and boys, depending on what year. Mainly, we have for both the younger ages, we have both for the girls and the boys.
That's awesome. You have to start somewhere. So
Yes.
the goal is to reduce the cost. So how does this affect your guys' culture? So you guys have created a culture to reduce costs. So what is your mission statement or culture that you guys are trying to cultivate through this process?
So the whole thing with Port All Stars FC is that we're very family oriented. We are very family oriented. So everything that we do, we'd always try to just mainly put the player first. At some point, we had all of our coaches were just volunteers. They were not getting paid. They still don't get paid very much, but that's not why we do it. As coaches, that's not what we're doing. We're not trying to make a living off of it. We're just trying to help those kids. So we're happy with volunteering and helping those kids out. We do a lot of fundraising for kids that need extra help. We tend to do work, actually one is coming up quite soon. We're doing a hosting a tournament, a Halloween style tournament. So it's going to be played throughout the night, and it's going to be November 3rd through like the 4th, since it will be in the night. But the point of that whole thing is to invite different clubs to come in, play a tournament, get some extra touches, but also be able to fundraise money for the kids, for their costs, for leagues, uniforms, anything that the team might need.
That's awesome. So you guys do, then you have must have a lot of fundraising. So your structure is, I'm trying to think how to phrase this. So with your culture you guys are trying to build, so it's player-centric, family-centric. With that being said, how many coaches do you have then within the club? Because I know that when you get to larger clubs, when it's any of the large five clubs in the Metroplex, they have 60 to a couple hundred coaches across the system. And when you're getting that many, how do you are you guys able to meet regularly, talk about what you're seeing and how to help each other out and produce an environment to help build the players individually? Or do you guys have like a program you guys use or software or a drive to put information into to create game practice plans or training sessions in?
So with our coaches, with us being a small club, we have not as many teams as bigger clubs would, but we still have quite a bit. We have 18 teams right now, and what we try to do is get all the coaches in together. And so bi-monthly, we have a coaching meeting. But we also have like a coaching group chat where we send drills, ideas, and we do this thing that we just started. It's called co-coaching. It's not assisting coaching, but we call it co-coaching, where a coach steps in and he views the game, sees how the coach interacts with his players, how he plays during the game, but also goes once to their practices and see how the coach interacts with the players during a practice. That way, they can see the game setting coach and the practice setting coach, and kind of get a feel for how they do it. And they also step in, do one drill of their own. That way, that coach can see, oh, my kids maybe respond better to this, or maybe they like this better that this coach that does. And so we kind of just try to do again community, trying to help each other out to see what works best for all kids, because all kids are different. So we always have a wide range of like players that might be really good with one coach and then work really well with a different coach. So we try to help each other out a lot.
That makes sense. I mean, I know several coach programs that work that way. It's where all the coaches can technically step in and fill in at any moment. My daughter plays for Villarreal. She's five. And so like all their coaches literally could step in at any moment and coach any of the girls because they all know all the players. And this is one of the, I always use them as an example because I find there's what, six coaches, seven coaches in their club, and that's it. But they all can coach. They all can come in and train at practice or come in and coach in a game, whatever it may be, which is awesome about the small club culture that you guys have. So with that being said, so where are you guys out of then? Where do you guys?
We're out of South Fort Worth. So kind of like Fort Worth / Burleson area. We have kids coming from all over the place. I have girls coming in from Godley, Texas, from Saginaw, Aledo. We have kind of everywhere. Over time that we've grown, it's kind of gotten a lot bigger than we had anticipated. Normally it was just for the small neighborhoods here in Fort Worth, but it has definitely grown, and we're definitely very happy about this because we started the club during the pandemic. So it was one of the most challenging things that we could have done. So we only had like three teams at the beginning. One coach, Coach Carlos, he is a great coach. If you hear Fourth All-Stars, that's probably the name that comes up the most because he has a lot of teams. But he's the one that kind of started us all off with all the coaching. And he's kind of like our mentor that we look up to when we're coaching. He's the one that started with all the teams, and he's kind of just the stepping stone for Fort Worth All-Stars FC. Him and Samantha Montez, the founder of Fort Worth All-Stars FC, they're really the ones that really brought this in all together and have made it grow into what it has become today.
So with that being said, you mentioned coaches, and I'm sorry, we'll bounce all over the place. You mentioned that he started. So how many teams on average does a single coach might have? I mean, you might co-coach or have an assistant coach, but how many coaches does one coach tend to have?
One coach tends to have one team. There is an exception. I think we have two coaches, myself and one other coach that has two teams. And then Coach Carlos has three. But mainly all the other teams, they only have one coach. One coach per team. That way it's more to their players, more focused on their one player. But we still help each other out, like what I was saying, with the co-coaching and everything.
You collaborate, which is awesome. So that means you roughly have, give or take, 12 coaches from the sounds of it. 10 to 12 coaches. And are the coaches part coaching because of they have a player on the team, or is it just because they love soccer and they love coaching? Because at beginning stages, it normally starts because there's a parent and a player, and eventually the player moves on and the parent stays coaching. So,
yes. So, the main how we started it, when we say family oriented, we had Coach Carlos had his kids playing for the team. So we had he had two of his kids playing for the team, and so he had two teams when we started. It was just his kids wanting to coach his kids, wanting to take them up a little bit, and it grew into, I've got another coach, his daughter, he wants to coach his daughter's team. Okay. And so kind of like that, it was just those two coaches. Now for example, I don't have anyone on my teams. I just purely do it because I want to be there and help these kids grow in the sport. It's mainly because of that. And now you're getting a lot of more coaches like myself that we don't have any relation to the team at all. We just want to do this for the kids. And so we're there. Even when it was volunteering, I was still there before getting paid. I wasn't doing it with anyone in mind in the team or anything. It was just the main thing of their goal was to help the community. I wanted to be able to do something about it too.
That's awesome. That how do I describe it? So I have interviewed several coaches and several clubs now. And the big thing they've all talked about is the difference between United States soccer and rest of the world soccer. I truly believe we'll never be a soccer developed country until we embrace the sport as a community. And I've been taken on to that argument, but and I truly believe that that's because we embrace soccer, we embrace football as a community sport. You see the whole high school come out for the football games. You'll see a good portion of the school come out for other sports like softball or baseball, but you don't have the same show out for soccer. And when you start looking at how the community respects the game, once we have the showouts where they're comparable to American football versus football to the rest of the world, we won't have this energy in what you're doing. So do you feel that because you are very community oriented, that you have more of the community backing then to help you guys foster what you're trying to do? Businesses, spacing, and all that stuff.
Yes, I definitely do believe so. Like a lot of the fundraisers that we have, we always can count on people to help us out. And if it's just you have this big, large group of people and we're fundraising and they just give $5 each, it really goes to help and push us. And you really see the support in doing so. And I think we've really noticed that and recognized that throughout this time that we started fundraising, because at the beginning it was just, oh, make sure it's like really low cost, that way they can be able to afford it. And throughout the time we're like, oh, let's all get together, do a big fundraiser that we can all be there for each other and support. So we usually like to do, we have one team doing one kind of fundraiser, whether that's a car wash or something of that sort, and then another team doing, we do, so we did this Loteria night, and so it's a game that we play, and you basically pay to get in the game. And you raffle off prizes for the winners. And so we kind of have the team do kind of their own thing. And then all the teams go and support that one team. And all
That's
the teams go the next month to support a different team. And so
awesome. So
kind of help each other.
it's always ongoing fundraising for the club. So as your players progress, so have you guys started to look at other leagues, or what leagues are you guys in then? I know there's Texas Club Soccer League that I've seen you guys at. What other leagues are you guys in?
Okay, so our academy teams are in RPL, Regional Premier League, Texas Club. They're also at the Arlington League, and the select teams, they're at the API, TCSL, RPL, all those. There we have girls in junior, girls junior classic, and then we have teams in the girls classic and the classic league.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so
So I
we're really
guess
getting out there.
now, have you guys thought, thinking of the leagues and going into this, have you guys thought, I know there's a club here that has three clubs as under the umbrella, and they play in BCNL. So they have joined forces to have like they're all the best team in each age group come in and play under this umbrella, and then they that coach, whoever has that team, actually coaches that team under the umbrella name, but they have to have a second kit because they're playing ECNL in that, because they all have came together and agreed to this these terms. Are you guys looking at to do that? Are you guys hoping to grow organically enough to just to join like ECNL or ECNL North Texas or RL?
We're hoping to grow organically enough to be able to get to that point ourselves. We have gotten offers to do something like that, but it's never been, we wouldn't do that to our players. Just we're always trying to make sure that we have the same principles and we hold the same principles throughout, through and through. So we have had offers to do something like that. And if the right circumstances come, I'm sure that the owners will all think about it and debate it a little bit. But we are hoping that we're able to push through organically and be able to get there on our own principles and morals and keep going. Yeah.
That's awesome, because that is something that a lot of parents are looking at. It's, I want my kid to go play at these top tier leagues, these alphabet soup leagues. And it doesn't mean they aren't going to get looked at. Doesn't mean they're, because even for ODP, you have to go try out. It's not guaranteed. So if you have a great baller on any of your squads, you can say, go try out for ODP and they'll get the recognition, or go out for an ID camp and they'll get the recognition. Now, since you have kids that are U13, going to be or playing in U14 now, do you see those players advancing or have conversations that are where they're being poached? Not trying to be negative, but just because of their talent. Because if you're player centric, your priorities are development.
Yes.
Do you see these players, or are they loyal because of what you guys have done and built the culture? Because I feel like if you have a great culture, people don't want to leave. And because culture overrides big names, because it's not about the badge always.
It's definitely not always about the badge. We tend to see very often that players do get poached, like if you could use the word poached, by other big named clubs. And in our mind, we always think we've done what we can with this individual, and it's their right to choose what they want to do. And we don't see often they just come and tell us, hey, so-and-so was talking to us about this and that. We just want to let you know that's not going to happen. And I think it's mainly just about the family type of bond that we built. And they know that we have the kids' best interests at heart. We, even in, because you mentioned with the older kids, we see it now even with the younger kids.
Yes.
Even though they're so little and the main focus should purely just be making sure the kid loves the game, you see it a lot. And it is crazy how much I've seen it as a coach. I think I have been, out of all the All-Star coaches, the one that has been in this kind of turmoil the most with teams like that. So I'm not afraid of saying it, but I have had, when I started, I was very young. Coaching, I was very young. So people would always think, oh yeah, she's not fit to be a coach, so you should just come to ARPS. And so I had like almost half my team. There was like a 4v4 team, so it wasn't that many. Almost half the team taken away by this, a little bit of a bigger club, not a huge club, but a little bit of a bigger club. And then players end up coming back.
Yes, that's the
players
joke.
End up coming back because they don't like that, how their kids are being taught, because those, when people do that at such a young age, it's not with the best interest at heart. It's building that squad to be the best. And that's not what we want with such young kids. Because with that group, I think they were like 6-year-olds. So that's not what you're trying to look for if you're trying to do that. We always say, you know, doors are always open. Players have came back to our club before after trying it out with different places. I think it's really that community type of bond. And then other people see, oh yeah, that didn't work out for them. I think I like what we're doing here. I think I like this family, the type that we're doing. I think I like your morals, your principles, how you guys are working together. And so it's really gotten to that point where we could really see that we're just based on the kids. You know, you can go try it out, come back. We just want your kids to love the sport. We just want your kids to grow in the sport. That's really what our main goal is.
So that's the key part, especially in the younger ages. I have a 9-year-old and a 5-year-old. So I spend a lot of time when I'm interviewing talking about my kids, just because that's my area of expertise right now. Yeah. And that's the big conversation I have, is how do you guys teach development? Because at the end of the day, if you're developing players and parents understand and recognize that you're developing, I can use my 5-year-old's daughter's team. They play the diamond formation. Like most 4v4 teams, they don't, or 2-2, some play 2-2. That's what my son played for the longest time, was 2 in back and 2 in front. But they play the diamond or the airplane, whatever you want to call it. Mm-hmm. And they play soccer. They might be getting their butt kicked by some of these teams because they're bigger and stronger, but they're playing real soccer at 5 years old. They're passing the ball, keeping their formation, covering each other when the defender moves up, someone drops back. And I'm here watching 5-year-olds understand soccer concepts like this, but they're being taught a lot of it. It's just body movement. It's learning to move on the pitch. How do you guys teach the fundamentals? Do you guys do the U.S. soccer model of play, practice, play? Do you guys focus more on the individual technical skills of the players and then move into more of a scrimmage? How do you guys format your practices? Because I know as they get older, it does change. Mm-hmm. But the younger ages, and because you guys are a younger club, you guys are going to have younger teams. So how do you guys do it then?
So with the younger kids, the littlest ones, the 3- and 4-year-olds, we do a lot of the games types of situations. So we practice, let's say the skill set, practice it, play it in a game, and then in an actual scrimmage. But once they get a little bit older, we do tend to just mainly focus on not only We do certain practice on individuals and how their individual growth, the kind of skill sets that they need to learn, the kind of body movements, like you were saying, that they need to be able to do in game time, in game speed. But then we also make sure that we work as a whole in, hey, so we're supposed to be able to do this in a game as a team, pass the ball, move it around, game plays, strategies, even stuff like that. We allow the kids to come up with things like that. So I've recently had a practice where we were working on our corner kicks and stuff like that. And the players are like, hey, I've seen that some schools, some college schools, they do actual plays like this, this, and that. And so they came up with their own plays. And we always like to the players to show their creativity. So in a practice drill, our main thing is you're going to teach the player the right, if you want to say the right way of kind of doing something, but also allow them to create their own right way of playing the game. And so that's always been a big one.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's teaching them there is many different avenues to get to the same spot. It's just a matter of which one is the best for you. I use my 9-year-old often. He watches a lot of soccer. He's very analytical from the very young age. When you start at I9, you know how it is. It's like herding cats. And I didn't have a soccer background, so it's like I just let them do whatever they wanted. We work on some skills and during the games, but he would stand out of the little herd and wait for the ball to pop and then go shoot and score. And I find
That's a
it
smart
funny
kid.
because he's been doing that since he's been at 5, but he watches the game, he reads body language, and I feel like at times he does better and sometimes he's not. But he's 9 and he's not a pro athlete, and he has what is it, another 16, 17 years before he peaks. I mean, 18 years. I mean, when you really look at it, 18 years until he actually peaks. Soccer peaks at 27. When you start using that type of logic with parents, and it's like, look, athletes peak at 27. That's their peak, and after that's how fast they decline. When you start applying that, do your parents understand that when you talk to them about this? Because a lot of parents only see the W's and the L's and not the formation. And that's the thing my wife and I talk about quite a bit. It's our kids play soccer. We don't care if they're winning or losing. They're actually playing soccer.
With parents, when we started, we always lost. Obviously, you have to start at the bottom. We always lost. There was never any wins. And so parents would see, oh, these teams are winning. They're asking us to go over. And so they would, they want to go with the winning team. They want their child to be the best. And those parents have gone. And we always say, as coaches, if those people want those wins, they're not really fit to be part of this family. Because what we want is we don't care how many times we lose, as long as those kids are learning something. We had to start at the bottom to get to where we are. And I think that right now our teams are doing very good. If you look up our standing, they're doing pretty good because
Yes.
they're used to losing. They're used to being there at the bottom. They want to be there at the top. They're working really hard for it. And it's sometimes hard for parents, some parents, to understand. But I think as our family, as our club has kind of gotten closer and closer together, you kind of weed out those people that think that those certain things and get people that think the same way you do. And so we even have a conditioning coach, a goalie coach. And so our focus is mainly the player's health and making sure that the player is able to understand and be able to develop in the game. So a lot that goes in is we have a conditioning coach that works with some of the older players. We like to do it with the younger players too, just to kind of like make sure that they're getting that extra work in. But one of the main things that that trainer likes to do is talk with the parents on hydration and nutrition and a lot of things like that, because coming from there's certain players that do come still from these small parts of Fort Worth, small neighborhoods that aren't athletes. They didn't play sports growing up. So they try to be more knowledgeable about stuff like that. And so we try to give them as many resources as we can to kind of gain that knowledge that some other parents might already have just because of different backgrounds.
Right. You mentioned goalie coaching and conditioning coaches. Is that an addition to, or is that part of your club culture already?
That's part of it already. So we, since we're a small club, we get all the teams together and they kind of, it's going into like the monthly fees that they have to cover. That way everyone can be able to get that. Cause we know if we ask each team privately, hey, would you be able to afford this? Most of the teams, they wouldn't be able to afford goalie training, conditioning coaches. They wouldn't be able to. So we do it as a whole. And even then, those coaches that we do get, some of them, they're like, oh yeah, but just, you know, charging the least bit amount that you can, because we really just want to help.
Right. I think that's the thing. It's, I think there's a difference in a lot of sports. There's the people that love, eat, live, and breathe the game. And then there's the ones that see it as, well, I need to do, make X amount of money because this is my living. And I think that's the crossroad where a lot of clubs, coaches are at. This is why you have coaches that have about 100 girls or 90 something girls to coach, because each one's 100 and something dollars at the bigger clubs they bring in. I sat down and figured it out one time. Some coaches make really good money coaching.
Yes. Some
and the development and the development's not there. And I have a lot of good friends that I talk to that are coaches and or people I trust, so to speak, for advice. And they said, no, it's like, and a coach that has more than two teams, three teams will struggle getting development. He goes, there's a difference with a coach that has two 9v9 teams than versus a coach that has three 11v11 teams. You're not going to get the same quality out of that coach. He goes, the ones that have three 11v11 teams, they're working with roughly 60 girls or boys, 60 players. And then when you have the 9v9, you're building for that 11v11 team. When you have the 7v7 team and you have two teams that are 7v7, you're building for the next stage. And I'm like, I get that. Like when I coached for the short bit, we had an A and B team. Mm-hmm. And at the end, the goal was when we went 7v7, we had enough for one squad.
Oh, yeah.
For 7v7. Mm-hmm. Technically, we'd still break them in to two and try to recruit two, three more kids, four more kids, so we can still have a two-tiered system, a squad system, mm-hmm. better way of explaining it. But you could have them all rostered as one team. And then you can as you need players, you can transfer them back and forth. But you're planning for the end goal was the 11v11 team. It's not to have two squads for 11v11. The goal was to have one squad by the time you got to that point. And
yeah,
that's the thing. Are your coaches the same age group, or do they have like an 09, like a 2013 team and a 2017, or do they have two teams in the same age group?
So with some of our coaches, mainly it's a rare exception of three coaches, myself and two other coaches, that have more than one team. And those teams, for example, my girls, I have two different age brackets. So I have 2015 girls and 2016 girls. And in my 2016 girls, I have a roster of 10 girls, but they're still playing 4v4. I'm moving them up to play 7v7, but technically they would still be playing 4v4. And so I do have some girls that don't get to play in certain leagues, but we always look for other leagues. That way they can still play all together and still kind of get all as a team. And those are just like the newer players. But we do have now with like Coach Carlos, that the one that has like more than two teams, there are developmental teams.
Right.
Now.
You have your competitive and your developmental team. Yeah.
Yeah. So we have our developmental teams now that we are having a lot more players. We do have developmental teams. And mainly because our goal and one of our big things as a club, apart from the whole community aspect of things, is that you will never see an all-star team or anyone in our club having tryouts, holding tryouts. You will never see it. We will never turn away a kid because of lack of skill, no matter their age. We have gotten kids that have come to us and said, oh, well, I tried out for so-and-so club, but they said that for my age, I'm not at the skill that they want. I'm not at the skill level that they need, just because they started a little bit late. So we will never turn away a kid, no matter the age, no matter the skill level, we will never turn away a kid, because we think that as long as you're helping that player develop and grow, no matter what level they're at, they can get better and you can help them become a better person within the sport too. So our goal is not only well-rounded players, but well-rounded people. We want to raise people that are good people.
Right. I think that is the message also. It's that's out there. As a parent, I can only do what I can do for my player, and I feel like that is the avenue that the sport offers. I had a conversation recently, and the conversation was just that. It was soccer is the avenue to build character and other resources for outside of the game, not just on the pitch. What you do on the pitch is one thing, but what you do on the opposite end of that, on the other, I don't know how many hours, I can't think of 168 hours in a week, the other 100 and we'll call it 160 hours you aren't on the pitch during the week, 150 hours you aren't on the pitch during the week, those are the hours that matter. And it's the values that you build on the pitch. And that was his message that he was portraying. And it was kind of interesting because it's very backwards to the American culture. It's not building, like I said, we aren't a soccer community, and I don't think we will be a soccer developed country until we have a soccer developed community. Mm-hmm. And this is so important, is to educate parents on clubs and understand what their priorities are for the clubs. Mm-hmm. Now, do you guys work with other clubs, or do you guys kind of are siloed or wall building? I don't know how to describe it. Or do you guys welcome other clubs? Do you guys communicate, or is it? I know coaches from other clubs talk to each other all the time. They're good friends. They've known each other for decades, and it's not so much, it's in the best interest of the players. It's not so much if we lose a player, oh well, this coach might be the best fit for you. Or do you guys just trying to build? That's your main focus right now.
Well, we're not necessarily work with other clubs, but we do keep in touch with different coaches from different clubs. So like if we need extra touches and we're like, hey, so-and-so, would you like to come out and train with us? I actually have a scrimmage that I set up with one of my fellow coaches from a different club that we're going to be scrimmaging on Monday for the kids to be able to grow. And it's mainly just that we do. We do try to like reach out and get some extra practices in with other clubs, or like just games and stuff like that. But yeah, it's mainly like that.
And that's I asked just because I recently did a coach's roundtable. That was the conversation we had, is that as hard as it is, if we truly care about our players, mm-hmm. as you as coaches, as parents, mm-hmm. sometimes we have to let go and let the kid go, because our coaching style does not match mm-hmm. that player's coaching style. Like I know what my son's, what he flourishes under and what mm-hmm. he doesn't.
Yes.
Just like my daughter, I know what she does very well, and what she, right as of right now, I've not seen, she's only played on one team other than coaching her at Blue Skies for indoor. Mm-hmm. Other than that, I know what she likes and how she reacts. Mm-hmm. And I know exactly how my son is. So would you guys recommend, that's why I'm asking, is because that's a very serious conversation.
That's kind of how we started. So before we had our own club, that was always what we did. We had a team and we thought, wow, this kid is really talented. He needs to go places. Before we had our club, we were like, oh, let's send him to this club. And then we're like, you know, we could do it ourselves, because then those kids end up coming back and they're like, yeah, that's not kind of the coaching style that I was going for. I was kind of going for something more like what y'all have going on. But yeah, if there's anything that ever like that, well, we always think it's the individual player. We always like to look at the individual player. It's not always the team aspect. It's always that one player does this, this, and that. And so they need this kind of coaching that goes along with it.
Now, have you guys thought about more of the future as kids? Let's say you do have a roster, your developmental and competitive teams that you may have already set up, your squad systems. If a player is flourishing on the developmental team, are you guys able to push them up into the competitive team, or do you guys hold them back until the next season, or do you allow them to play with both, or what do you guys do in those circumstances then?
So always for so our developmental teams, we always try to find a league, at least even if it's like playing up, that way we can play in a bigger format where the two teams stay together and still play together to be viewed as one. We don't ever want to like draw lines and barriers between two teams of the same age category, Because at some point, they will be one team.
Right.
That's always our goal. They will be one team. So we want to make sure that they're still together, that they still have this kind of bond. But yes, if a player is on the starts on the developmental team and he's picking up the material really fast, then we most certainly move them up with the team that was already set in place. And mainly the developmental team, it wasn't really started like an A and B kind of thing. It all started with, oh, we already had a roster and more kids kept coming because they liked what we were doing. So it's not always, oh, the developmental team is the not so good one. No, they might be at the same level. It's just that we had more kids and that's the team that was just second to come.
No, I get that. I mean, as you get bigger, I mean, as the club grows, I'm seeing this. I don't know if you know who Wilco is with Dutch FC up in Frisco. He wrote an article about the squad system, and there's three types of players. There's your support player, your playmaker, and your all-star. And every team will have that. It doesn't matter, but your all-star might be a supportive player in your development team because that's the role he plays. Your playmaker might be the all-star on one team, but not the other. And it is very interesting because I feel like kids are smarter than we give them credit. And they understand this.
So so we always like to bounce off our own coaching styles with different coaches. We may not all have the same coaching style. We have the same principles, same kind of steps that we kind of teach, the philosophies of the game, but we may not all have the same coaching style. For me personally, as a coach, and a lot of coaches know this, so they implement it as well. I am not a huge fan of, I love that the game plays, like the little games, like Sharks and Minnows and stuff like that, that little kids play at the beginning, because it teaches them to love the game.
Right.
But then I also love telling coaches, it's not always about the Sharks and the Minnows. It's not always about the little games. Kids understand more than we give them credit for.
Right.
They understand way more. And if you really put into perspective, like I would, so with my girls, I always taught them, hey girls, these are a little bit harder drills that the big kids do, but I know y'all can do it if we practice it a few times throughout the week. So I practice a real hard drill with them. And then the next day we'd play games and then we'd practice that same drill again. And it kind of like, it's just repetition with them. So they kind of get it in that kind of mindset. And I always tell players and parents, I know it looks maybe like they're struggling right now and they're kind of getting a little frustrated, but give them time. Don't rush them into it. They are able to understand. They're able to acknowledge what we're doing. And they're able to understand it to a different level that we might not think because we see them as little kids, but they really do know things. They're really intellectually really smart when they're on the pitch. And it's just incredible to see them actually be able to do it and right. to be able to perform at that level at such a young age. For me, I felt, this is another story. We would never want to hold back a kid just for everyone else to learn. So we're always trying to make sure we push them forward enough to where they still love the game, but enough for them to grow and grow and grow. It's not only about the games every now and then. They can understand really complex drills if you really allow them to, and you really push in a positive way.
I think the younger, like under 6 or 7 age groups get the really hard drills faster than the kids that are older than that. It's funny because you can have a bunch of 5-year-olds out there doing a drill that the 10-year-olds that are struggling with. It's hilarious because like the 5-year-old can get it, but you can't. You're almost twice their age. But at the same time,
they grasp knowledge a lot differently.
Yes, and it goes back to the interview I just did recently, and he talked about the interpretation of the game. There is their interpretation, and then there's the parents. And it kind of hit me hard because I view the game probably closer to how my son's viewing it, but maybe not in the same way he does. I'm very analytical because that's what I do for a living. My son is very analytical of the game. So he's watching. We spend a lot of time talking about weak foot of a player that he's playing. What's their weak side? What's their strong side? And I always challenge him to identify that very early on in the game, because that means he can use it to his advantage. But he's been doing that since he's been six, not doing it at 9 years old. He's been doing it. And my daughter's the same way. It's like, I always give her like, okay, you have to go find what foot do they always use. She's five. She may not always remember it because that's not her priority. Because if I make that her priority, the guy who I interviewed said, like, if you give them priorities before the game, that's all they'll focus on because that's going to be their perception of the game. And my son's very goal-oriented, so I always give him three goals. But that kind of made me think, am I giving him too much information before the game? Do you guys give long conversations before games then because they are young? Or do you guys, as they progress, tend to have less and less conversations or more and more conversations? As someone said, like, a three-minute conversation is a good conversation for any age group.
I think it really just depends on the coaches. I know there's a lot of our coaches, they like to see the creative side of a player. They love to see that. So what we like to do is before the game, we like to ask the players, hey, what do you want to see out of this game? What do you want your teammates to do? And so kind of putting them in that kind of leadership role. And I think it really tests their understanding of the game instead of just talking at them and telling them, hey, you're going to do this, this, and that during the game. Hey, what do y'all think we should do the game? What do you think we should do during the game? What do y'all think that our team should work on? What do you think, even during halftime, if you're having a rough game or if you're doing good and you ask them, hey, well, so what are we doing good? What can we do better? It really challenges them to think for themselves and to be more creative with their gameplay instead of just being very rule oriented. Oh, we have to do this, 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 and that. Go ahead and go do it and show me on the pitch. No, you require for them to actually think the game through their head.
I think that's critical. I think a lot of coaches, because it's all about the win, you want little robots out there. And by the time they get to U13, you exhausted the golden years of coaching. U14, you've exhausted those golden years of coaching for creativity, and it's gone. And creativity is not just how they manipulate the ball. It's also how they view the game. So I think the way you guys are getting to before the game is so critical. I like that. Now with your coaches, your philosophy is the same and the different coaching styles. Do they come in? You said earlier that you guys co-coach.
Yes.
And I've seen this with big clubs, and I've also seen it with all the clubs now. It is most of the time they'll have one or two coaches that will come out throughout a season. So you might get once for the year. Do you guys do that more than once then to get for the coaches to know the players? So if someone has to step in.
Yes, we do often stuff like that. And we also just like having practice really close together. So we like to keep all our teams kind of practicing in the same area. Just to build that kind of bond, because if we have teams practicing in different areas of the place, they don't know each other as much. And so you can always hear kids cheering other teams on during the games if they have like breaks in between their games. Like, oh, let's go watch so-and-so's team. That way we can cheer them on. And so you always kind of have that support and that kind of like cohesion between teams. And so we really like to promote that throughout all our teams in the club.
Now, with that being said, you guys talk about skills and things along that line earlier. Do you have like a skills night to the teams? I know that some clubs have free skills on certain nights of the week, and it's open to all the players in the club, not just, and sometimes they open up to siblings. Do you guys do stuff like that just because you guys sound like a very close niche culture, or do you guys do that more in practices?
Yeah, we do it more in practices. We don't host skill nights, but we just allow the coaches to teach their skills during their practices. We do, however, do skill camps. So during spring, you'll see posts on our Facebook page about skill camps. During the summer, you can see posts about skills camps. We also, part of the FC, we have some coaches do on the side kind of thing, just to kind of give back to the community. Also do like homeschool practices for homeschoolers. We currently have one going on right now in Burleson. but classes, soccer classes, just to kind of help kids learn the game. Like maybe they don't want that club energy feeling and they don't want to be in a club, but they kind of still want the kids to be active and try something new. And so we still give that to any kids, homeschool. So we do homeschool classes and things in camps and stuff like that.
That's really cool. Now, do you guys do on social media, do you guys recognize your players as they're progressing, or like a shout out for players to give recognition so they feel validated for the effort they're doing? I mean, you see all the big clubs every week have a squad of the week for every age group or whatever it may be. Do you guys highlight players or recognize them in training, or how is there anything you do like that?
Yes. So we have our social media page, and it consists like of all the managers. But we, as a club, we like to have happy birthday messages for each kid on their birthdays. We have like a calendar of all the kids in the club and their birthdays, and we write them individual posts. And we think that that goes a long way. Instead of just saying happy birthday to so-and-so, no, we write about them specifically. So if you have this energetic kid that you know, it, happy birthday to so-and-so, we love your energy on the field, and we specify the messages to that player. And I think that's mainly just like because we are a family. And so it's just like if we were posting a family member, that's how we write about our own players on their birthdays and things like that.
That's awesome. That is so, so critical for kids. I feel like just to see themselves on social media. My kids don't have social media. we're trying to, I mean, my 5-year-old obviously doesn't, but my 9-year-old, we've really pushed off that as much as possible and electronic type stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But for parents to show them like, hey, look, you made, it's such a big deal to them. So trying to think of my other questions I have. Is there anything that you want to talk about regarding your club that we have not hit yet, or?
Mainly, so our club, I think that we always kind of have had the same mindset of just making sure the individual is growing, player-wise, person-wise. And I think that that's really important, and that some clubs kind of shy away from because they get into the more business aspect of it. And we don't, we have to focus on the business aspect, but our main focus is always on that player and that player's growth throughout the time. There's no way that you can go around the club and not know other people within different teams. We're always around each other. We're always trying to build this sense of community. And I think that a lot of people, a lot of bigger clubs lose that kind of sense of community. And if we lose that kind of sense of community, we don't really know each other. How are we going to play with each other? How are we going to be able to grow and be better versions of ourselves without being able to take into account other people's perspectives of the game, other people's ideas of the game? And I think that having that sense of community really helps build kind of that kind of structure that you want your kid to grow up in.
And that's so that is important. I know. I can tell you from personal experiences that big clubs all, I mean, every club has their strengths and weaknesses. It's a matter of what the player and family really wants out of it. Mm-hmm. I know there's some really big clubs in the Metroplex that I love. Mm-hmm. And they do a lot for their players. But there's other big clubs that only if you're at the top, it's not open to the other, the other squads that are out there, other players. Because they aren't at the top. And it's like, if you're only building the top, you'll never be able to feed into the top. And that was the message they really gave me was, I had a side conversation with them one time. It was, how can you build your top team if the foundation of your club is crumbling? And they're still trying to be the small club at the big club at the same time. And I feel like the smaller clubs have the upper hand with this mentality, because it's easier to build your next age group. So if you're having a 2017, 2016 age group, it's very easy to push your culture and your foundation. So
Yeah, we always try to just keep growing and pushing up, building up. Sorry, excuse
You're
me.
good.
Also, one of the main things that we always push to our players is the competition aspect of the game within your own team. We always want there to be a competitive environment for the kids within their own team to compete for those spots. But we always make sure that it's not just, oh, competition and we're all against each other. No, we're all a team. So you're pushing each other to be the better players. If you think your team is the best, that's great. Work within your team to push each other to become even better and better and better. And so we always have to push for that mentality with kids. We always want them to be able to know that this is your family. This is your family. You don't push anyone down. You work together to build each other up. If you think, oh, so and so is better than I am, you so and so, hey, let's work on this together. Let's practice with these kinds of skills and use those resources around you. Use your family to really help build you.
Yeah, that's so key. So, and with that conversation we're having, education for coaches, then how do you educate? Do you guys go through your coaching license? Do you guys attend coaching seminars? Is that even a priority for the licensing? Because I feel like depending on who you talk to and what level you're at, licensing is great, but it's not the end all be all for coaching.
Yes, we do have our coaches do the licensing, and if there's any seminars near the area, we do push them to like go into those kinds of things. Licensing, we do must. It's a must. But the main educational form that I think we have is using each other as resources. We have some coaches that have coached for other clubs, or they've grown up in the club themselves, and so we really push to educate each other throughout it. So we do have a little group message where we're all just randomly sending links that we find. Just send. We don't even send messages. We just send the links. Here, I found this.
Right. I think that is something I've talked to a couple of clubs about, and that's one thing they talked about. He goes, I have my licensing, but he goes, there are so many other better resources than US soccer coaching. He goes, I have all my, what did he say? All my badges. And he goes, at the end of the day, those badges mean nothing if I can't actually apply them. And so that's what I'm getting at, is that
Agreed.
sometimes a
Yeah.
coach may not be able to go into the coaching licensing and get it. I know that when a large club here, they have their own coaching philosophy. They have their own criterias for coaches to follow. They say, go get your coaching license done so you have it. But once you get it done, forget it all because it doesn't actually work. And I kind of
Yeah.
chuckled when I heard
We do
that.
something kind of like that a little. I understand where you're going with that. Yes.
And that being said, I think the licensing gives, what's the word, validation to the club for
Yeah, credibility.
credibility. Yes, that's the word I was looking for. Thank you. Credibility to the club. But at the same time, I know coaches that probably are way better coaches than the licensing will ever be able to produce for them. And because they have coached at high levels and played at high levels, they have a different perspective of the game.
Yeah, we always allow for coaches to use their own kind of experiences. Yes, we have certain club philosophies, and we want to make sure that the players grow up in these kinds of environments that we're trying to build. But it's always up to the coach's creativity, the coach's decision making on how their team is being taught. You have coaches that are a little bit more skill oriented, and they're like, oh, you need to know these skills. And there's some coaches that are more team passing and kind of stuff like that. It all depends on the coach, what kind of perspective you are put into that team. But we do say, go get your coaching license, just that way the club has that kind of credibility. But you are allowed to do and as you may with your team.
That's awesome. Now, do you guys have do you guys use technology? Do you guys there we go. Leverage technology in your favor. There's the VO, there's all these different types of things out there. Camera systems for games. Do you guys use it, or do you guys only use it for certain age groups, or do you guys let other age groups use it so they can learn how to use it?
Yeah, so like with the VO that you were talking about, we use it for our older age kids. the older age groups use VO in order for their coaches to kind of like show them, hey, so this is kind of what was going on in the game, this kind of to kind of dissect the game and to like kind of have whole discussions about it. We use it for the older age groups, not so much for the little kids because they will not pay attention. The younger kids, their attention span is kind of short, so we don't use the VO for like the 4 and 5 year olds, but we definitely use it for our older teams, the select teams and the older academy teams.
And now, do you guys take time out to have like a third or fourth practice for those players to have film time, or do you guys send it out and do it like what we're doing, like a Zoom meeting, and have the players sit down in different rooms? I've seen coaches have a skills night beforehand, and they all get pizza and sit down and watch game film together, to just watching straight up game film, then answering questions, and then parting way. And it's not even a long film session. It's maybe 45 minutes, just enough to get the message out and be done, and not even watch more than 15 minutes of the match.
Yes. So I think it really just depends on the team, what they do with it. I have seen a coach that has just sent like highlights of the game. Right. That way they don't have to go through the whole thing, just highlights of the game to the players and kind of explain it to them. I've done it even in practice, recorded them in a practice and seeing how they move in a practice too. But the main thing, we do like to get those kinds of like conversations going about games. So even if it's not our own games, like we had the World Cup, we hosted some view parties and we had discussions throughout them. Even the Women's World Cup that just passed also, we had some of our teams just get together and kind of watch it together, and kind of, you know, be able to see how the game is played from a different perspective. Cause some of our like younger girls teams, obviously they don't play that format. So they're like, hey, so like, how does this position work in this kind of format for some of those players that don't play that big format yet? But it is always good. We like to make sure that there is always some kind of conversation around watching the game as much as it is playing the game. Cause it's one thing to be able to be in it and play it, and it's a different thing to be able to understand it to the full extent where you're not only able to play it, but you're also able to see the things happening around you. So we always like to make sure that that's available to players.
Do you guys play indoor soccer then at all, or do you guys strictly stick to the outdoor pitch?
We play year round, so we're fall, spring, summer, winter, everything. So during winter and summer, we play indoor soccer, and we have all our teams playing indoor soccer. We like to head out to Game On in White Settlement, Game On Sports Arena, to play our leagues over there with all of our teams. So we take all of our teams out over there.
Love it. Thank you. Okay, so I'm going to give you my last two questions, and you can answer them however you want. And so I need a little bit more information on you before this last question. So were you a player beforehand? Did you play collegiately, high school, or club, or what's your background?
Before the FC was a thing, I started with the 4th All-Stars team. I was that one, that from that one team. And then afterwards, I didn't get to play high school soccer because I ended up skipping through high school and going into college when I was 13, 14. So I skipped through, so I didn't get to play the high school soccer. But then once I turned 18 and I went to Texas Wesleyan University and I joined the team there, the women's team that they had there. So I didn't get to play high school soccer.
No, I'm just curious because I never got that in the beginning. So yes. It's because everyone's soccer journey is different. I know kids. So
I played academy. I played growing up with the All-Stars, but then I also played for different clubs growing up because we didn't always have my age group per se when we were starting. We always had younger age groups, but not my age group. So I played for different clubs, and then that's when I played, skipped through to collegiate level.
No, that's fine. I mean, I know there's kids that never play high school and only play club because they don't have time because the club schedule is so much.
Yes.
It can be very intense at times. So my last two questions is, who's your greatest influence you as a player? It can be anyone, doesn't have to be soccer related. And now, who's your greatest influence for you as a coach?
I'd say for both. I think it would definitely, sorry, there you go. I think for both, it would definitely be Coach Carlos. He is a great player. He doesn't play anymore, but he has always been such a great player, and he is a great coach. Most of the time, you see these kids. We always help each other out with co-coaching, but none of his kids ever have anything bad to say about him, and he always pushes players to become the best player that they can be. And he's gotten a lot of kids that have been turned away from a lot of clubs, whether that be oh no, you're not good enough, or oh, it's just like your character kind of thing. He always pushes his players to become better, and he's had several players that have had very rough backgrounds and kind of things like that, and he always makes sure that not only the player's good, but the person is good. So he always has this kind of mentality of doing what is right on and off the pitch, showing your courage, your integrity, all of these things on and off the pitch. He really nails it hard with his kids. And I think that that's just such an important thing and aspect for a coach. He does not care about the wins and losses. He has had the most losses that anyone can imagine. And that's why he is the coach that he has become. And I talk to any club coaches now, being a coach myself, I talk to any club coaches. Oh, you work with Coach Carlos, don't you? And they all love him because they all know that he is a respectable coach, that he is a coach that puts his players first, a genuinely caring coach. He talks to other club coaches, gets their input on his players and everything like that. And I think that that's something that you can really look up to, seeing someone that's able to take other people's perspectives, take other people's ideas, take other people's thinking and reasoning behind things, and really put that into your own coaching is really an incredible thing. I know when I started coaching, it was always a little bit hard for me to hear criticism and things like that. And I think he's really helped me understand that you need that kind of criticism for your coaching, whether it's from parents of from your team, from other coaches. You need that in order to be able to fully understand and grow as a coach and as a player. And I think he really drills that into his kids, and I think that that's something really admirable to look up to.
Hey everyone, I hope you guys enjoyed this week's episode of Chat by the Pitch. Working with Fort Worth All-Stars this week has been a lot of fun for me, learning all about what they do and who they are as a club. They may be small, but they are very talented players in the Fort Worth area. The coaches have high expectations, and I've actually seen them play. So if you're looking for a club in the Fort Worth area, check them out. Now, folks, if you enjoyed this episode of Chat by the Pitch or enjoy this podcast, please give me some ratings and some stars and some reviews. The more reviews I get, the more it actually gets recognized. So start listening and start reviewing. So thank you so much. Until next time, I'll see you at the pitch.